Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Would you like to reach hundreds of thousands of athletic subscribers? Who wouldn't? Our lot are great. They're intelligent. They have demonstrably long attention spans for all of those long reads. And that means they're almost certainly the ABC ones you're looking for. Imagine your brand front and centre on the Totally Football Show, or Talk of the Devils, or Football Clichés. You can advertise with us now. Our highly skilled and effortlessly charming commercial team are waiting to hear from you, whether you want a single ad on View from the Lane or full title sponsorship on our Women's World Cup show. We've got something for everyone.
Contact partnerships at theathletic.com. That's partnerships at theathletic.com.
The Athletic.
All right, Reds, Tony Evans here with Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Liverpool leave it late to provide their latest disappointment, and with it, the FA Cup defence is done. On the plus side, they didn't concede first. Robbo reckons things are getting worse. Well, does he have a point? And we'll discuss what not to expect before Tuesday's transfer deadline. Here with James Pearce and Andy Jones. Right, you know the score, boys. And I don't mean 2-1. Three words. Go on.
Sick of Brighton. I'll be a little bit more positive. Signs of progress. But that's a very, very reaching sort of comment, shall we say.
Oh, I'm going for make it end, make it end. But we've got a selection of three-word thoughts from our new Walk On Facebook group, which, you know, you should join. Jonathan Spence says, average right now. Thomas Spiro, lost our groove. Simon Adderley, we need changes. Ian Corrigan, not Klopp's fault. Well, let's talk about whose fault it is.
Liverpool won't be coming back to Brighton for their holidays, beaten here twice in the last three weekends. This defeat, terminal for their defence of the cup. They need a reboot.
The manner of defeat was, it was pretty bad, wasn't it? They started off playing reasonably. And then it's all unravelled. They're finding new ways to lose. The mentality monsters are like the kings of the last minute goals are conceding them. James?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing to say is it was, of course, a very different type of defeat and a very different performance to being down there, 15 days earlier when that was a day without any redeeming features for Liverpool. I think there were signs of life on Sunday. I think you can see that they are in a slightly better place than they were, but it does feel like kind of grasping at straws when probably the one realistic hope of silverware left for this season has gone out the window. It was the frustration for me was that Liverpool could have won that tie on Sunday. You know, they were certainly first half especially, I thought they gave as good as they got. You know, they were more creative, certainly a lot more creative than they were against Chelsea. And that was the frustration, the fact that they didn't, you know, having gone in front, they weren't able to build on it. And I thought they were more solid. They were more compact. I think you can see there's been tactical tweaks that have made it slightly more difficult to play through them. Although you could say it could hardly have become any easier. But yeah, I think the annoying thing was it just felt that it was going away from in that second half. And I think Klopp is partly culpable for that, because I thought his changes off the bench made Liverpool progressively worse rather than better.
Well, we'll discuss them in more detail in a minute. But, all right, Andy, who do we think come out of that with any credit?
I think the starting midfield again, that is probably the midfield that makes Liverpool look most solid at the moment. You can have your issues, you know, sometimes Abby Keita's use of the ball, sometimes Thiago's use of the ball, and sometimes the way they get caught. But generally, think they, and it's probably why Klopp stuck with them in this sort of three-game stretch, is they've given Liverpool the most structure. I thought Cody Gakpo was, had to be his best performance in a Liverpool shirt. And I mean, he's not necessarily put, you know, sort of any great performance in yet, but I thought that was the first, it was the first time I watched him, and sort of, other than that first game against Wolves where, you know, it was all new and it was just, anything he did was going to be great. You know, he looked a lot more assured, or a bit more sort of in the know about what his role was in that central position. I thought he picked up a couple of really good positions. You know, he got on the turn a couple of times, you know, looked at spotting runs and feeding his other forwards. And it was probably the best he'd looked in terms of looking like a Liverpool sort of central striker. I mean, there's still plenty that you'd need to improve on. You can tell it's certainly not coming naturally to him in terms of that position. And, you know, you can feel he wants to probably be out left when he knows, and he can probably settle a little bit easier. But I thought he was probably one of the standouts in terms of just looking a bit more threatening, providing Liverpool with a bit more, you know, dynamism. As James mentioned, he did look a lot more threatening than they did against Chelsea, and I think he was a big part of that because he was able to get into the game a little bit more and sort of with the ball at his feet show what he could do.
James, just coming back to the midfield, is that the midfield for Real Madrid?
Well, I think at the moment it probably has to be if you're picking on form. I think that's just the reality of where Liverpool are at. I thought it was really significant the fact that Klopp didn't go back to Henderson and Fabinho. You know, it says a lot about where Liverpool are at right now. The fact that he stuck with an 18-year-old kid and a player in Keita who's out of contract in 4 or 5 months' time because Henderson and Fabinho have both been so out of sorts. And I thought it did make Liverpool much harder for Brighton to kind of get at and expose their back line. I thought in terms of, I know you asked Andy about positives, and, you know, Bacetic for me again. We talk about how it being difficult for Gakpo coming in, walking into a dressing room so low in belief and trying to impress. Well, it can't be that easy for an 18-year-old kid as well. But he's been an absolute breath of fresh air and shining like a beacon during some pretty dark times. And I loved as well how Bacetic handled the early yellow, because you think, oh, you know, disastrous, like booked inside 15 minutes or whatever it was, you know, but he's able to control his aggression, you know, and the reality is Liverpool really missed him when he went off. And of course, didn't have a massive problem with substituting him later on, because I think, you know, he's bound to fatigue kick in a bit. But suddenly when you were looking at a midfield three in those closing stages of Henderson, Fabinho and Jones, there were more gaps for Brighton to exploit. That's the reality.
Well, let's talk about the F word, Fabinho.
Do you know what? Whenever we talk about, I always feel a bit guilty because you don't want to. I think when Liverpool are in such a collective malaise, there's a real danger of finger pointing at certain individuals and suggesting, you know, this is all on you. And it's, of course, there isn't one or two or three to blame for this. It is a collective problem, but I don't think you can get away from the fact that when you look at where someone was at consistently before this season and where they're at now, Fabinho's decline is without a shadow of a doubt the most startling. And you kind of thought, you know, I wondered, you know, maybe taking him out the firing line for a few games might trigger like a real positive response. Because, you know, it must have dented his pride as well, being dropped for an 18-year-old kid when you're talking about such an established international footballer who, you know, we're quite rightly been regarded as one of the best holding midfielders in world football for the last 3 or 4 years. But yeah, I think that bizarre little late cameo just showed where he's at the minute. You know, I think you only have to look at his reaction to when he ploughed through the back of Ferguson. It was a horrible tackle. No one could have had any complaints at all if he'd been sent off for that. But it was, he just kind of put his hand on his head, didn't he? As if to say, I just can't believe I've done it. You know, I feel for him because I get it. Like, sometimes you question players' attitude and desire and stuff, but you don't. I don't think anyone does that with Fabinho. I think he's just having a really, really tough time. And, you know, I think Sunday's bizarre, you know, those 5 minutes kind of showed it's probably mental as much as physical as well.
He was having a great time on the bench before he come on. He was having a real good laugh. You know, we'll say, yeah, it was fantastic. And then he come on. But what's he doing? I mean, he puts that challenge in. You know, he nearly breaks the lad's leg. But then he's like to the ref, oh no, send me off. His body language was saying, I'm as guilty as sin.
I think it's so weird, isn't it? And I think that sort of probably sums up his mindset at the moment of like, everything has gone wrong for me so far this season in terms of performances. And then he's had the World Cup break. You thought, well, obviously he went away with Brazil, but, you know, barely played. And you think maybe that'll give him a chance to reset if he's in a bit of a different environment and he comes back. And then he comes back, you know, his performances continue to travel on that same trajectory, which is the opposite of up. And then, as James said, you then get dropped for an 18-year-old. And, you know, he had his 5-minute cameo, but even the cameos he's had in recent games, he's come on and almost been a detriment to the team in every time. And I hate saying that, and I feel really, really sorry for him, because this was a lad who was one of, if not the best, you know, holding midfielder in the world, you know, literally last year. So the decline is incredible in terms of literally, there's, you know, suggestions and signs at the back end of last season, but, you know, he was still performing at a consistent level. It was more than good enough for Liverpool and what they needed from him. But it's just fallen off a cliff so quickly. And that's probably how he sees it, right? Because no matter what he does at the moment, it's wrong. Because this might be one for James. I don't know what. Has Klopp been getting asked a lot about Fabinho, and what has he sort of said? Because he must find it, I imagine Klopp finds it pretty difficult to understand. And if he can't understand it, it must be so difficult for the player. Because how do you work on things to get better if everything's going wrong, and no matter what you do, it just keeps you getting worse?
Yeah. I mean, he has been asked about it a few times in recent months. I think it's a really awkward subject for him to discuss, because, of course, I think, you know, I think the initial thing you can see that goes through Klopp's head is you on someone who's clearly so short of any confidence, you don't want to create any kind of pylon by admitting he's in a, you know, in a really difficult place. So even, in fact, he was asked about him in the first game at Brighton 2 weeks ago, because obviously, you know, him and Henderson were kind of like real weak links on that day. And he said, well, you know, you tell me who is having their best season for us. You know, it's like, you know, he said, you know, you've just named a couple there, but tell me players who are, you know, hitting their usual levels. So yeah, I think certainly, and I think when you talk to people behind the scenes, there's no one's really able to put their finger on it. I don't think...
That's the mad thing about it, isn't it? No one's got a solution, no one's got an answer, because they don't even know why he's like this.
No, and you know, I think, you know, what is he? He's 29, isn't he? We're not talking about someone who's like, you know, if it was almost like a James Milner type thing where you were like, you know, he's been defying the age process for years and years, and then suddenly playing 700 games has caught up with him, it would be a lot easier to get your head around. And it's not like Fabinho's ever had like blistering pace, and you're like, you know, has he suddenly lost half a yard? And it's a real, real strange one. And I feel for him, because I think you're right. Like, you need to look at his expression after that challenge. It was like, he just couldn't quite believe what he'd done. You know, I wrote a piece coming back from Brighton last night on kind of, you know, what has changed and what hasn't changed since that debacle 2 weeks earlier. And like I said, you know, there are signs of life, you know, a bit more solidity, a bit more creativity, Klopp being ruthless in terms of dropping certain individuals. But there's still so many issues he's grappling with. And Fabinho is one of them, because, the end to this slump doesn't show any signs of coming to a conclusion.
Well, on that jolly note, I'll give you this stat. It's the first time that Liverpool have scored first and gone on to lose for 2 years, February 21, in the 3-1 defeat by Leicester. Oh, please, Leverden, score first, don't concede, and just win.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, host of the Athletic Football Podcast. It's the final week of January, and that sound you can hear is clubs frantically trying to get deals over the line before the deadline closes on Tuesday night. Myself, David Ornstein, Adam Crafton, and our raft of club experts will be all across the biggest moves this week, and we'll discuss the fallout when the window shuts. So just search for the Athletic Football Podcast on Apple or Spotify, or wherever you listen to your pods.
Imagine the scenario. A much-loved and inspirational leader has announced his intention to take a career break, and you need to find someone just as tactically astute and charismatic, but perhaps without the glasses and the teeth. Well, when you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and that's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else, and LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive. Hiring is simple when you have that many quality candidates. So simple, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. And LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They've even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even quicker. So post your job for free at linkedin.com/walk. That's linkedin.com/walk, W-L-K, to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
This season has been nowhere near good enough. At the turn of the year, we kind of wanted a new start and trying. It's definitely not got off to that. You know, we've probably been worse.
Tony Evans here with James Pearce and Andy Jones at Walk-On from The Athletic. Andy Robinson there, speaking after the defeat at Brighton, saying the Reds are getting worse since returning from the World Cup break. Well, James, he's got a point, hasn't
he? Yes and no. When you look at the overall results since the World Cup, of course, they haven't been good enough. Although I think it would be completely wrong to throw Sunday's performance into the same category as what we saw at Brighton before that. And you can't just overlook the fact that Liverpool did go to Wolves and win in the cup. They did keep another clean sheet in a pretty dour, lifeless stalemate against Chelsea. And of course it's not good enough. But I think Andy Robertson, you know that he's probably hurting in that dressing room as much as anyone right now. And I think that post-match interview just kind of showed it, because, you know, he referenced the fans, didn't he, a few times in terms of, you know, the thousands that have made the trip down to the South Coast. And he said, you know, we keep letting them down. And he obviously feels that, especially having been given the honour of wearing the armband. So, yeah, I think there was a fair bit of raw emotion in that assessment. I think it's far too simplistic to just say, well, things are just getting worse. Well, it's like, well, they're not just getting worse, are they? Because, you know, that was the nadir was at Brighton 2 and a bit weeks ago. And since then, there has been very marginal.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Well, it can't get any worse than that, can it? It can't. Like if we, I know that famous last words and all that. But yeah, so I understand where he was coming from. But I think sometimes there is a lot of revisionism in modern football, especially in terms of, you know, if Liverpool don't, you know, do what they did from that late set piece, if we're talking today about a replay at Anfield, I think we're probably having a chat about, yeah, do you know what? That was probably about right. But yeah, I mean, I must admit that the late goal absolutely infuriated me, because I just think when you've worked that hard on the training ground, clearly, to try and sort out some of the glaring problems in open play and how easy it is to cut through you and to make sure that you've got those spaces covered. You know, set pieces are just basics, isn't it? Just absolute basics. And it's like, it's not one mistake, it's three. You know, I think it was Estupian unmarked to receive the free kick from Gross initially. It's like, why is he able to bring that ball down, get his head up and pick someone out before anyone's got anywhere near him? Then when he lofts it to the back post, some of the movement is, you know, clever in a way, but still far too easy, and it's 2v1. Like, the lack of communication back there. And then, you know, Joe Gomez, what he did beggars belief in terms of turning his back like that. You've got to be better than that. You know, there's three glaring errors there that led to Liverpool getting knocked out of the FA Cup. And I do think, take that moment out of it, it wouldn't be the doom and gloom that I think, you know, lots of people are feeling at the minute. It wouldn't have been good enough. It still wouldn't have been good enough. But it was, you know, I think we need to keep a sense of perspective, because it wasn't anywhere near as bad as the last time we were down there.
Even so, 3 wins in 9 since the return, 4 defeats, only 2 clean sheets. And I thought this is really interesting. Only 1 goal past the hour mark in the 9 games, you know, since the World Cup. One of the things that, looking at the Brighton game, is there was a bit BS and PS before substitutes, post substitutes. It unraveled, didn't it? So is Klopp to blame from his substitutions, Andy?
I think that there's certainly an element of it, especially against Brighton in the most recent game. I thought initially that the three changes he made gave Liverpool a bit of a spring. I thought, you know, adding Nunes is always going to give you a bit of a lift. I know Trent was very disappointed to come off, but, you know, I can understand Klopp wanting to get somewhat of a fresh legs on against Matoma, who's just in, appears to be in the form of his life, especially when he plays against Liverpool. And I did think Liverpool did step up in the press, and the crowd sort of got the supporters involved a little bit more, and there was a little bit of life, and they did press Brighton high and made it a little bit more difficult. But then he makes the next change and the next change, and then I think it didn't help Brighton also change themselves and went from what was basically a 4-4-2 to more of a 4-2-3-1, and they began to exploit the spaces a little bit more in between Liverpool's midfield. But yeah, no, as you say, the substitutions continue to make Liverpool worse, and you sort of see it in that last 10 minutes of the kind of control Liverpool had for part of that second half, and then lost it again in that last 10. And that's when you saw all sort of the mad challenges, and Brighton were just the only team who looked like they were going to score, unless Liverpool somehow conjured something up on the break through a Nunes, bit of magic, or, Salah bit of magic. So yeah, it wasn't, and you saw that midfield that had been, as we've sort of referenced, more compact, more sort of structured and rigid. It began to come apart again, and Klopp's got to take a bit of blame to that. And you could talk about, needing to save legs and stuff, but Liverpool's schedule at the moment is, you shouldn't need to be doing that. He's not helping things, but equally, these players are players he's trusted in the past, and last season, if he brought on Jones and Henderson and Fabinho to shore things up, you'd be more than happy with that and think, yeah, this is going to be fine. We'll carry on and just come on and continue to do what Liverpool midfielders do. But the problem is he can't. You don't know what you're going to get from these players at the moment, and not much of it has been very good. So that is the problem as well. He's trusting these players, and they're not then replicating the performances he needs from them, which doesn't help any manager anyway.
James, what did you make about his comments on body language after the game and the need for improvement?
Yeah, I think Klopp was just referencing the fact that he felt there were some individuals out there who were feeling sorry for themselves rather than trying to galvanise the players around them to kind of salvage something from that tie. And I think, I don't know exactly who he was referring to. I think we could probably all have our guesses, but I think it goes back again to just that kind of lack of self-belief at the moment that is kind of running through the team. And, where for so long of the Klopp reign, we've always talked about it, as much as they've got some very incredibly gifted individuals, the whole has always been greater than the sum of its parts. Yet now it's almost the flip side. It's like they're nowhere near delivering at the level. When you look at the names on the team sheet, it should be. It's underachievement on a massive level. And that's why you can't just discard the injury situation, because, any team in world football would miss. You take out Van Dijk, you take out Diaz, Jota, Firmino. But when you look at the talent that's still there and what's being produced, there's a huge disconnect. And yeah, it does. That's why, I said a couple of weeks ago, I thought this was the biggest challenge Klopp has faced during his Liverpool career, and nothing in the last couple of weeks, despite a few little straws to grasp at, has changed my opinion, because that there is so much wrong, so much malfunctioning that he's still wrestling with.
Yeah, I mean, we do at times, in all the hysteria, and there's always hysteria around Liverpool, isn't there? We do forget that the extent of the injuries, it's not completely a mitigation for these performances, but that's played a part there. But I mean, Andy, what about, basically newcomers to the club, Gakpo and to a lesser extent Nunes? What must they be thinking? I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah, exactly. And especially Nunes, who obviously comes in and then wins the Community Shield straight away and gets the goal, and must think life is absolutely superb. And it, that game, at that point pointed to Liverpool looking to replicate what they were going to, well, try and replicate what they'd done the season previous, and or at least be certainly up there competing for all the honours again and trying to win them all. And Yeah, it must be so strange. I mean, Gakpo especially, you know, Nunes will have seen this sort of, this whole thing play out, given how, you know, he was there for pre-season and sort of seen it all the way through and how things have sort of dropped off. But yeah, Gakpo must have turned up after hearing what Van Dijk probably would have said about Liverpool and told them and how great it was and all this that, and then turned up and sort of to this mess, which he's now, you know, unfortunately become part of. So yeah, it must be really difficult. And I think it doesn't half help if you know, like we've referenced in the past, that Luis Diaz came in into a team that was winning and, you know, successful and you know, so well drilled, so, you know, so well oiled in everything they were doing. So it must, you know, it's easy to fit into that. Whereas, and wasn't necessarily seen, even though he became a catalyst for what Liverpool then went to come on, he wasn't seen as, this is the guy who's going to go and win it all for us now. This takes us to sort of a, you know, he's the man who now everything relies on. Whereas Nunes came in and sort of became that figure based on the performances of everyone else. And then Gakpo coming in as a January addition, given what Diaz did before, you know, it's the same type of thing. Can you be the catalyst? But there's the pressure on of needing to be, rather than Diaz, who was a complementary piece to what Liverpool already had. And then when you factor in the fact that they're coming into a team where, you know, there's so many underperforming and so much change that needs to go to sort things tactically, it's not stepping into a team where everyone knows the role anymore. It's stepping into a team where people are still trying to figure out how Liverpool can navigate games and not lose.
James Klopp's one of his best qualities is his ability to motivate and rally people round and gather the troops and all that. Do you think they're listening to him now? Do you think internally, are there any problems that you've picked up?
No, I mean, I don't. I think coming away from Brighton the first time, the thing that really worried me was, you know, I think it was a genuine question, have they stopped listening? Because when a team performs at such a pathetic level as that day, you're bound to ask that. But there's so much wrong. There is no quick fix. And there's lots and lots of little factors that have contributed to that. So no, I just think it's all a bit muddled at the moment for me. Even the situation with the front three, and for a team and the manager that's played on the front foot and always worried about, always talk primarily about what they can do to opponents rather than trying to limit opponents. I'm just not a massive fan of this, of Gakpo through the middle, when, you know, Klopp on Friday talked about how, you know, he loves Gakpo's defensive work and how he drops off and gives them almost like an extra man in midfield at times, out of possession. And it's like, well, do you know what? I really want the centre forward to be doing most of his work the other way. I don't really want
it. Yeah, if I was Gakpo, I'd be like, what's going on here?
And Andy's right. I thought Sunday was Gakpo's best performance of, what was it, five so far, without a shadow of a doubt. And there was, you know, some real powerful surging runs. But part of the issue was those surging runs started and finished in areas where he wasn't really able to hurt Brighton, because I wanted him 20 yards further up the pitch. And that's where I think it doesn't, you know, and Klopp kind of, again, he referenced it after the game when I was in his press conference at Brighton. He talked about how, you know, when Nunes is there as the number nine, you know, it's not, you know, he's not really had to do that before in terms of all the stuff off the ball and dropping off, and how they're still working with him. And I know where he's coming from in terms of making you more compact and, you know, and stopping moves and stuff like that. But it's like, I want to see Darwin Nunes in areas where, you know, he can really stretch defenders and use that pace and power to get in behind teams, which I don't think getting in behind is really Gakpo's game. I just don't think it's working. It just adds to this feeling of it all being pretty disjointed, that you've got Nunes playing in a position where he probably doesn't want to be. If he's honest, he wants to play through the middle rather than left. And Gakpo, you know, I read some quotes from him yesterday, him saying, I'm having to learn a new role. I primarily played on the left. Now I'm being asked to play through the middle. So it's just, I just don't really get it at the minute. For me, there's some muddled thinking.
Well, yeah, there's plenty of muddled thinking at the club at the moment. You're listening to Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic.
In towards Gerrard! Oh. Hello! Hello! Here we go!
This is Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic, with me, Tony Evans, James Pearce and Andy Jones. All right, what's going to happen before the transfer window deadline? Come on, James. You're going to fix it all, aren't you?
Well, it would really have to come out of the blue, I think, for there to be anything to get the pulse racing before the deadline. Klopp went on record himself, didn't he, confirming what I think we've said numerous times, that the club had decided they weren't going to do anything else before the deadline. And yet, for me, it's a missed opportunity to at least start to address the glaring problems in midfield. And yeah, I get the fact that the main summer targets just simply aren't available in January. But I think there's also an argument that Liverpool probably need three midfielders in the summer. And is it really impossible to try and find one now that is better than what you've already got? So, yeah, I think unless that changes and something does suddenly, there's a deal that they thought was impossible that suddenly becomes available, which, of course, we have seen that happen at the end of windows before. It doesn't look as if there'll be any more incomings. And then just waiting to see what happens with Nat Phillips. Obviously, wrote a story.
Where do you think he'll end up?
Well, wrote a story yesterday that the Galatasaray have made contact and they're keen to take him to Istanbul. He's open to that idea if it is possible that an agreement can be reached between the clubs. Could be a loan, could be a loan with an option to buy, could be a permanent. But yeah, obviously the return of Reece Williams from Blackpool meant that Liverpool were open to letting that go, at least. Maybe it'll be just for the rest of the season. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, it's not shaping up to be a thrilling end to the window.
Oh, it's going to be brilliant because it's going to be civil war, because after the reaction to the Spirit of Shankly and the Manchester United Supporters Trust joint statement at the end of last week, we've seen on social media all the please buy us Qatar ultras coming out and demanding that someone come in and spend pots and pots of money. Andy, it's madness, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be pretty crazy on Twitter this week, especially, as it looks like Liverpool aren't going to add. I mean, I was half hoping they'd take the credit card down to Brighton and bring back Moises Caicedo, but I think I was living in dreamland there, because he's someone Liverpool couldn't half do without, or do with even. But yeah, no, it's going to be...
The way we're doing without him at the moment, you know.
It makes me words up there. But yeah, no, it's one of them, isn't it? It's just going to be, as it has been, it's becoming very, very toxic at the moment. And it's, you know, and that's because everything's sort of culminating in this, you know, and every issues from everywhere. And some of the reactions just been bizarre.
When things go wrong, the bedwetters come out. But to be honest, I'm dribbling a bit myself during the night, the way things are going. So, you know,
I did find the reaction last week to the Spirit of Shankly joint statement with the Man United Supporters Trust was like disgraceful and bizarre in equal measure, because how anyone could possibly read that statement and have any arguments or complaints about it. It's just, I just think it shows just the madness of social media and how toxic things have got, when, you know, like the number of people that just assume that was some kind of, you know, reaction to talk of Qatari interest in Liverpool. It's like, what are you on? Like, I remember having discussions with Spirit of Shankly about, you know, that way before Christmas, that they were, it was in the, you know, this joint action with Man United fans was in the pipeline. And how can anyone possible, you know, it's demanding that the government, who are obviously in the process of producing this kind of white paper, aren't they, in terms of how the, you know, changes to football and, you know, saying that it's important that there's stronger controls in place who owns and runs football clubs. And to me, how is that possibly a bad thing? And then, you know, that's just the kind of controls that there should be, because for far too long, football clubs have been treated like just private companies and toys that rich people can do what they want with, rather than the community entities that mean so much to so many people that they actually are. So yeah, it was absolutely just bizarre. I think it has become more and more toxic, the stuff on social media, and it just made me laugh, because on the one hand you get all these people tell you how irrelevant you are and how you know nothing and all the rest of it, then on the other hand demanding that, you know, if you write that Liverpool must spend X amount on X player, then FSG would definitely just go and do it. And it's like, well, make your mind up. Well, like, I can't be both irrelevant and have the power to make them to put
told
their hand
you before,
in their pocket.
Told you before, you're to blame for the transfer policy. Now, I'm going to hold you responsible for players not coming back from injury.
Right.
Give us some good news there.
Yeah, there is good news on the horizon in terms of, I think Jota is closing in on a return to full training. And then, you know, you've got Van Dijk and Firmino that Klopp said he expects to have them both back around as well by the middle of February. Even the lesser spotted Arthur Melo is potentially going to be playing a game of football at some point in the not too distant future. I think Klopp said he's back stepping up his rehab 2 or 3 weeks away. I don't think anyone is holding out too much hope for Arthur Melo transforming the Liverpool midfield, but it's an extra body and another option, and that can't be a bad thing. But yeah, I think I'm probably out of that. I think, you know, they've certainly missed the leadership of Van Dijk, and I'd say probably more than anything, like the energy of Jota, and I do think, you know, having him on that left hand side, you know, I hope that that means that we do then see a bit more of Darwin Nunez through the middle. And yeah, of course, Diaz probably a little bit further away. I think March we're looking at for him. So I think, you know, that game, that tie against Real Madrid seems to be creeping up, doesn't it? What is it? Probably 3 weeks away now, which again is a scary prospect at the minute. And it's, you know, it's all about trying to build to a position where you can, you know, at least go into that game against Real Madrid, not fearing that you're going to have to watch it from behind the sofa.
I've already double stacked the sofas in preparation for it. No, but you know what? By then, I don't know, Arthur Melo's going to rise from the dead and he's going to give us a really happy ending to the season. Anyway, that's all for today from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James and Andy. And you, the listeners, remember you can get involved via our new Walk On podcast group on Facebook. Just search Walk On Podcast to get involved. We'll be back on Thursday, ahead of another trip to Wolves, and we'll catch you then.
The Athletic.